Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish, where we explore the culinary, distillery, and the winery arts in and around the Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, host for your gastronomic tour of the region's amazing food and beverage scene. And I'm here today with Brian Bruno, who is one of the owners of Apple Ridge Farm, an artisan sourdough bakery in Sailorsburg, which is just northwest of Slate Belt and Wind Gap area. Brian, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Great to be here, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your land and where it's situated and how long it's been farmed and how long you've been farming it.
We're in Monroe County, kind of in the Blue Mountains, right north of the Lehigh Valley and south of the Poconos, kind of in a weird little spot there. 7 acres. My family's been on it since like 1971.
Okay.
Started out as just more of a homestead, and about 22 seasons ago, I turned it into a commercial farm. It's just kind of grown from there piece by piece.
How about the quality and characteristics of the soil that you have there?
We actually have really good soil. We're in a spot where that's stony. We're definitely in like a glacial area, but it's interesting. We're an old mountain that's worn down, but we're an old seabed. So like we found a shark tooth fossil in our, so we've got interesting ground. And in the county, it's very good soil, like a silty loam. Stony, but we had enough compost to really make it killer.
You mentioned compost. Talk a little bit about some of the sustainable practices that you use there on the farm before we start getting into some of the things that you produce there.
So the cool thing about Apple Ridge is we're a lot of different things. Like our motto is sustainability through diversity. So we do a little bit. We do poultry, chicken and eggs. We do a little bit of pork. We do vegetables, a little bit of hydroponics. Our whole farm is wood powered. So even like our bread ovens are wood fired. We have a boiler to do heat for the greenhouse and for hot water. We have a lot of wood ash as a waste product. We have actually a horse logging sawmill right over the hill from us. All of his slab wood and a lot of his sawdust comes our way. Everything rolls into the next thing, and we make a lot of compost, mixing all of our waste. It goes back out. We feed a lot of our leftover bread and things from a rainy day at the market, go right to our pigs and chickens. And so we really have very little inputs. We always joke, like in 22 years, we've never purchased a soil input. And our soil tests come back perfect because we have all this free material that we have to do something with. It all just makes excellent compost. And actually, the whole neighborhood brings us their leaves. So we probably get like 800 bags of leaves a year. And that's how we mulch everything down as well. And the leaves just work their way. And, the carbon just keeps building and building. And the soil gets darker and darker and deeper. And every year, we have better soil.
And the cost is right.
The cost is right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Let's kind of work through the things you're producing on the farm, starting with produce, some of the things that grow really well in your soil there and some of the heirloom varieties that you're growing.
Yeah. And so when we started out, we grew a little bit of everything, and we were very much like a produce focused market vendor. Over the years, we've kind of dialed it back to things that do really well for us, which is generally roots. Like we kill it with every kind of root there is. And B, we're big on value adding. So if we can't value add it, if it comes back from the market and I can't turn it into something else, I stopped growing it. So we're big on potatoes, onions, cabbage, carrots, beets. We do some greens because greens are still very popular at the markets. We do spinach. But spinach goes on there with spinach pizza. A lot of what we grow, I'd say 50% at this point of what we grow never makes it out to market. It goes right through our kitchens to come out as either like a soup, a chicken pot pie, a topping on a focaccia, a topping on a pizza, or gets fermented through our fermentation business into sauerkrauts, kimchi, all that kind of stuff.
Well, also with fermentation, you do sourdough there, and you have a bakery on site that's been there for a while, too.
We do.
You talked about the wood-burning oven.
We have a large wood-fired brick oven. I think we can fit about 120 loaves of bread into it at one time, so it's a large oven. We're doing focaccias, we're doing pizzas, and then all kinds of sourdough breads, granola, cookies, quite a bit.
Well, I'd say the fermenting, too, is certainly common right now, but that kind of goes back to how things were done back in the day. That's how you preserve things. It wasn't just for flavor.
Right.
And when you're talking about something that's sustainable, that's a great way to take the vegetables, preserve them, and also use them in the dough that you're fermenting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the cool thing about the ferments, too, is it allows us to take our season and not just have like a really busy 6 months and then a really slow winter. The things that we turn into krauts and kimchi and brines are good for months and months. So we can take that right into the winter. We can kind of like stable out our year.
So there's not just revenue during the growing season.
Right. You know, when we get rained out on a Saturday, we don't have to come back and throw it all in the compost. We say, oh, great, now make more sauerkraut, you know. So, yeah, it works out really well.
And you mentioned some of the animals you raise there with the chickens, also rabbits as well.
We do some rabbits, yep. Yep, we do a little bit of rabbits. Everything on pasture, so everything's in mobile pens moving around. And, yeah, rabbits are super cool because they really eat the grass. Like, they're like a lawnmower. So on all of our paths in our garden ways and stuff, they just move and they literally like mow the path. So we try to make everything rabbit pen width. And we just, you know, just keep moving them around and they mow and eat. And yeah, rabbit's cool.
And when you raise the pork too, again, going back to the sustainable practices, part of that in terms of how they eat and how they forage, that actually helps the vegetables grow, right?
Yeah, well, actually, we don't really put the pigs where the vegetables go. They're so destructive. What we use the pigs for is we have like around all of our fence lines, we probably have like a 15, 20 foot buffer. We have a road that splits our farm in half. So we have 5 pigs on the left side, 5 pigs on the right side. We have them in horse trailers and they move along that fence all the way around. They just do a giant circle each side around and they keep my fences clear. Because without them, we'd be all into brambles and bushes and they eat everything. I mean, when they leave, it looks like he came through and plowed it, tilled it, threw some grenades on it. But they don't eat. They flip over because they're looking for grubs and stuff. But it works because they keep that fence line clean.
And also it eliminates the need to buy extra fossil fuel or diesel or whatever you're using, right?
Exactly. Exactly right. Yeah. No, it works out great. And then, you know, they get the feed benefit. We get the work out of them. We keep them moving. And by the time they come back around, it's all grown back. So there's something to eat again. Yeah, it works out really well.
Hey, you get work out of them, but it makes them happy, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And talk about the distribution that you have. I know people can come to the farm and you have a store there, but you work a lot of farmers markets and other markets, right?
We do. So we have a store on the farm that's open 7 days a week, a little store, but we carry a lot in it. But then we do 14 farmers markets throughout the week, and we sell to a number of local, you know, like small health food stores and cafes and other farm stands, and we get around. Yeah.
I saw you at the Easton Farmers Market, and you've been there for quite a while, right?
We started doing Easton probably 20 years ago. We left for a little while, then we came back because that market just got so good. So we've been doing that one for a while now. We do Stroudsburg, we do Emmaus, you know, in the valley. And then we do a number of markets into New Jersey, down into Bucks County. But I think we go down as far as Horsham, which is, you know, a little north of Philly. Yeah. And then we go as far north as Warwick, New York. And we go everywhere but west. We just don't, for some reason, there's just nothing out there for us west. So we go every direction but west. Yeah.
Hey, I'm wondering, in general, if you're seeing a movement toward people caring more about where their food is grown and who's growing it.
It's funny. So we do see movements. I'll say we see movements. And it's funny, it's always based on like a new piece of information or a documentary comes out. You know, like after it was Omnivore's Dilemma, kicked off a whole food movement. They brought on Food Inc., which everybody watched. Food Inc. was a very popular. And then people, you know, like crazy. But it's funny. It seems like the big guys always catch up. So we have these buzzwords and then they have them. And then you know, they always find a way to like get the marketing dialed in to kind of. So it comes and it goes, it ebbs and it flows. Like there'll be a new piece of information. And generally the message is like, shop local, shake the hand that feeds you, like talk to the person who's growing your food. And people come out and there's definitely probiotics. And it's funny, there's so many buzzwords in there. And talk about eggs. So many customers are so confused. Like, what is free range? What is, you know, there's all these words. And a lot of times, you know, I feel like people are all getting wise to the fact that like a free range egg could come out of a chicken that's still a million chickens in a chicken house. But I find customers are so frustrated and confused. Every time a piece of education comes out, we see it. It spikes. But then it drops back down because convenience is still king, even in our business, you know, trying to figure out how to get home delivery and all these things we're trying to navigate ourselves because that's the way the world's going.
I guess to what extent then does, you know, a level of trust develop between consumers and the farmer where there's all this information on the internet they're hearing from friends or family or anything? Who can they trust? And they should be able to trust the person who's actually growing things and producing things.
Right. And we do see a lot of customers have really good questions. I mean, the folks who, especially for like a health need, they've got dialed in questions. You know, they want to know exactly, okay, well, you're saying like, well, where are you buying that flour? Like, what's the name? More and more, they are asking the right questions, especially around things like soy and organic practices, you know, especially animal raising practices. Like, tell me exactly what you mean by pasture raised. So yeah, we do get a lot of questions and we always tell people, come out, just come out. Let's take a walk. Like, let us show you, because until you see it and then you know the questions to ask of the next person. I mean, everybody's got a good story. Getting that trust, you get to know them. They ask the questions. And a lot of folks too, like so many more people are having like allergies and allergic reactions, you know, so it's like they trust you when they can eat your bread and it doesn't make them sick.
Right.
You know, and that's when really like we have a lot of people come back and say, I haven't been able to eat bread in 10 years. Like, what are you doing? You know, it's like, well, let's really talk deep about like all the things that go into making bread edible, you know, and then they trust you because their gut tells them it's good.
Right. And how we make it versus how it's made in a large factory setting.
Yeah, but a lot of times the products speak for themselves, especially when you're talking like allergens like flour.
So, Ryan, we've got about a minute left. I wanted you to talk a little bit about apprenticeship programs that you have.
Sure. We work with PASA Sustainable Agriculture. It's a 2-year farm apprenticeship. Our guys and girls come. They spend 2 seasons with us. They learn all aspects of the farm. They get free workshops. They go to a conference. They go to like all kinds of training and even like financial benchmark or financial course they do. I mean, welding. They do a whole lot of different courses for free through PASA. And then they go out and we hope they learn to be successful farmers.
Next generation.
Yeah. Yep.
Brian, where can people find you online?
AppleRidge.net and CollectiveCulturePA.com are our 2 websites. And then at any of the markets, we always tell people, find the market closest to you because we want it to be convenient.
And come up to the farm.
And come to the farm if you want to take a tour or see where it happens.
Well, Brian, thanks for coming down here to WDIY and joining us and talking about farming up in your area.
Absolutely, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I'm Mike Ravenstock. This is The Inside Dish.